Welcome back to Beyond the Uniform. I'm Justin Nasiri, and my goal is to help military veterans thrive in their civilian career. I do that by talking with veterans each week, learning more about what they do in their civilian career, and getting their advice for other veterans seeking a similar career path. Today's episode number 238 with Carolyn Taft Pestel.
They kept saying, you know, forget about what job you want, this or that. What do you love to do? And it just dawned on me, and that day I ended up applying to culinary school because I was like, that's what I want to do. So forget all this corporate route I'm heading to. And I had taken the GMAT, I was going to go to business school. I was like, I'm going to go to culinary school. Unfortunately, the culinary school I was enrolled in went out of business a month before I got out of the Army. So that put a damper on that. And I was like, oh. But it was a great sign that I had already made that jump of telling myself that the options were so much broader than I was giving credit for. So in that sense, the floodgates are already open of recognizing I can do this type of field full time. So I'd say that would probably be the like distinct moment where I went from it being a hobby to I can do this.
Well, today's interview originally aired in December of 2016 as episode number 40, but it remains one of my favorite interviews. In this interview, Annie talks about what it's like to start a company while on active duty. She talks about her decision to leave the Army and her initial plans to go to culinary school, which, as you can imagine, is quite a big transition, and that was one that was not always met with the support of those around her. If you're thinking of starting a company either on active duty or years after your transition to a civilian career, this is a fantastic episode for you. As always at Beyond the Uniform, there are show notes for this episode, including links to everything we discuss, as well as over 240 other episodes just like this. There's also information about Beyond the Uniform's coaching program, where you are connected with a subsidized, certified, professional, executive, and career coach to help you guide in thinking about how to expand, grow your career, and achieve the life that you want. And with that, let's dive in to my conversation with Annie. Joining me today in Chicago is Annie Taft. Annie, welcome to Beyond the Uniform.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me.
So just a quick background for our listeners. Annie is the former, the founder and executive director of the Brazen Gourmand, which is a lifestyle brand for the culinary curious. She started out at West Point, where she graduated 17th in her class and served in the Army for over 5 years as part of the intelligence community. When she left the Army, she participated in the Stanford Ignite program, after which she started three different companies, of which the Brazen Gourmand is one. So maybe to start things off, Annie, how would you explain the Brazen Gourmand?
Yes, so the Brazen Gourmand actually started when I first graduated from West Point as a creative outlet for me, doing a lot of food writing and food photography, because that's what I was interested kind of as my passion project. But it's evolved over the years where now I've developed it more into an all-around brand that I vocalize through visually, through influencing with social media, whether that's on different platforms, writing about restaurants and events, things like that, doing product reviews, and then also working and collaborating with a lot of restaurants and chefs and brands, doing everything from photography, graphic design, consulting. So it's really taken on kind of a multifaceted approach to all things, in my mind, I call it culinary creative, things that are related to the culinary industry, but are a wide variety of approaches through marketing and creative design.
And I always like to ask about what your day-to-day life looks like. I think especially for starting a company, because it's so so much in pop culture right now, what is like a day in your typical work life look like?
Yes. So this is one thing I definitely struggled with when I first got out of the military, was the sudden, and I knew I was going the entrepreneur route, is the sudden expansive freedom of your day. And at first that seems like it's going to be a dream come true of getting to shape it yourself. But I found I really needed more structure in place than that. So I developed almost an OCD like timed schedule during the day. So it keeps me on task. So a typical day now is I wake up and I've broken out my day into 15 to 30 minute increments by what I think of as like the different departments of a company. So I'll address, you know, communications for 30 minutes, or I'll look at marketing for 15 minutes or 30 minutes. And so a typical day involves me working on either closing out current projects that I'm working on, seeking new collaborations. A lot of times it's offsite, working with restaurants, going to events to do coverage, things of that nature. So I'd say every day has a lot of different elements to it. It's difficult to predict what a day will look like when so many of the products I'm working on are very different in scope, but I try to keep pretty standard structure. I even force myself to structure and remind myself, like, sit down and eat lunch, or, you know, go and just read for 30 minutes to keep my brain going. So I'd say a typical day has some structure built in, but definitely diverse.
I like that. I like that thought of using structure. It's something I'm trying to work on as well, because I noticed that a lot of times when I'm not working, I'll start getting stressed or feeling guilty that I should be working. And I think that more structure would actually help, because then it feels like, you know, you're following a pattern when in entrepreneurship, very few patterns exist.
Absolutely. And actually I just came up with this a week or two ago that I found made that even more valuable, is even with the structured time, I found myself within that time, I call it like opening new tabs in my mind. When I think about being on a browser and I have like 30 tabs open. I'm like, no, you need to close one out, move on. And I think about that just mentally. I'm constantly, especially as an entrepreneur, opening these new tabs in my brain and needing to close things out. So what I did to kind of help me work through that is, under each category of how my day is broken out structure-wise, I have a running prioritized to-do list under that header of that time. So when I say, okay, my alarm went off for the next 30 minutes, my sole focus is only on outreach and networking, I have a running to-do list under that category that's in order of priority, and I can close them out one by one. So it really makes me feel on a day-to-day basis that I'm really actually making progress.
That's great. And how, you know, I hate to structure it around hours, but I'm just trying to make it tangible of like how, what the lifestyle component looks like. Like at this point, do you feel, is this like 24/7, or do you have time on the weekends, or what is your lifestyle around the startup look like?
Mm-hmm. Well, I'd say part of the, it's going to sound cliche, but part of the beauty of working on something that is my natural interest ever, like my day-to-day daydream is about, you know, dining and cooking and food and cuisine. And so in that sense, the structured part of my day, I typically have go from about 7:30 until 3:30. And in there, I've scheduled some like forced downtime, whether it's like a walk or working out or eating. And then the rest of my afternoon and evening, I leave to be like going out and eating or meeting with people or seeking new, you know, networking, new opportunities. And I inevitably find myself like continuing to work on projects or working on social media through the evening. But because it blends so naturally with my day-to-day life, because it's what I'm interested in, it feels 24/7, but I'm very comfortable taking breaks from it because it doesn't feel like going to work and coming off work, if that makes sense.
Oh yeah, totally. I mean, I think that one of the things I admire about the way that it seems you've built your company is you've built it around your passion and your natural interests. And I just imagine that that's such a rewarding way to structure your life, where you're just, there's so much alignment between your, what you would be doing in your free time and how you're now starting to make money off of that, which is really incredible.
Absolutely. And I think that though has been years in the making of getting to that point, because it's a scary at times jump to shed a lot of what you know. I remember in the military being told so many times that, you know, almost like if it felt good or felt easy, like it must not be going right, because, you know, nothing should bring you that type of, you know, ease or joy and things like that. And I think it's taken me years of shedding what I think I should be doing to get to the part where I'm like, no, this is what I want to do. And being able to answer to that question, not what I should be doing, if that makes sense. And I'm sure we'll get more into that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, my wife and I talk about this a lot, where we're actively trying to remove should from our vocabulary. Mm-hmm. And I think it's like the creativity killer, and it's just, it kills so many things. And I relate to that. I'd never thought about it directly like that, but that thought of that military thing of, like, you know, it shouldn't feel good. Like you, there should be pain, and there should be kind of, it should be hard and it should be difficult. That's a tough mindset to shed. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to back up, because I think it's really interesting that you started your company while you were in the military. What was that like for you, and any advice for another veteran who would like to start something while on active duty?
Yes. So for me, it was almost out of sanity. As a creative-minded individual that in the military, who didn't get to kind of tap into that side of myself, when I first graduated, I was just craving an outlet for writing, or, you know, taking pictures or expressing myself. And so that's how it originally started, was a creative outlet. And I'd say the way I was able to maintain it is treating it as my hobby. And because I didn't put the pressure on it, I had no true intention when I first started of seeing it as a business. I first saw it as just something that I really enjoyed doing. So in that sense, when I had my off time, instead of feeling like, oh, now I've got to go work on this side project of mine, it felt like, oh, like, thank God, like, I get some free time to go work on this project I'm really excited about. And so it grew naturally out of that as kind of my outlet or my release while in the military. And that's how I think I was able to find the time to work on it, is that's what I enjoy, really enjoy doing.
At what point did you think, so the two points, and maybe they're the same, I'm just wondering, at what point you thought, hey, maybe this could be something I do, or maybe that was from the start that you thought this could be something full time. But I'm curious, at what point did you think I could do this for a living? And then at what point did you decide to switch it from a hobby and say, like, I'm going all in now, this is going to be my full time?
Mm-hmm. So I would say that all the while I was working on the Brazen Gourmand in the military, it felt like a pipe dream. Like, my fantasy land would be, oh, I would get to work on this every day. But I'd never truly, I think at that point, recognize that I could make that a reality, just because I think we're so preconditioned with all of the expectations of what, you know, someone going to West Point and going into the military, like, I didn't think that that would ever be a natural path that I would find myself on. And so for that reason, I think it took a long time for me to see that there was that option. My transition from the military kind of reflects that, of recognizing that I wanted to find a career that tapped into a little more broad variety of my skill set than I maybe had been exercising while in the military. But I still thought I needed to go, you know, this kind of predetermined route. And I was working with the JMO recruiters and, you know, working on my path of how I'm going to end up in corporate America. And I just, each step along the way, I kept shedding, like, that's not it. Like, that's not what I want to do. And I had a really aha moment that vividly I remember that kind of changed everything. And I was sitting in one of the Army transition courses, and it was a voluntary course that I said, what the heck, I'll go. It was for going to trade school and how to sign up for apprenticeships. And it was so far out of the realm of what I had considered doing, but I just thought, hey, what the heck? And it just hit me. They kept saying, you know, forget about what job you want, this or that. Like, what do you love to do? And it just dawned on me. And that day I ended up applying to culinary school, because I was like, that's what I want to do. So forget all of this corporate route I'm heading to. And I had taken the GMAT. I was going to go to business school. I was like, I'm going to go to culinary school. Unfortunately, the culinary school I was enrolled in went out of business a month before I got out of the Army. And so that put a damper on that. And I was like, oh, it was a great sign that I had already made that jump of telling myself that the options were so much broader than I was giving credit for. So the, in that sense, the floodgates are already open of recognizing I can do this type of field full time. So I'd say that would probably be the like distinct moment where I went from it being a hobby to I can do this.
I love that. I mean, I imagine that the decision made all the difference. Like the outcome that the culinary school went out of business, although that's impactful, I imagine like that moment of making the decision, you eliminate so much fear. You like face all of these fears, you make that commitment, you kind of reestablish your identity. And then I imagine it was easier then to take whatever the next step was besides culinary school. But that first leap must have been enormous. And I love that too, because I feel like right, especially right now in time, like so many people go to this established route of business school or a law school or whatever else. And I went that route, and I don't think there's anything wrong with it. But I think that we're at a point where if people are much more honest about what they really want to do, it's going to be more off-roading than one of those traditional paths. And I think it takes a significantly amount more courage to do what you did, rather than like, you know, everyone knows about business school, but then I imagine had you gone to culinary school, your family and your friends would have been scratching their head and wondering, like, what are you doing? Like, there's some of that doubt you have to face too.
Absolutely. I think that has been one of, you know, there's various challenges about transitioning out of the military. I mean, it's a laundry list of things that you've got to kind of tackle and address, but that was one definitely for me that was, and it's still an ongoing thing, I think, is combating that sense of, you know, I think I'm over the greatest hump of it because here I am, I'm working this day to day and I'm thrilled to be doing it. But absolutely, it was an uphill battle of like saying to yourself, you can really do this. And it's hard because even though you've got the passion, the excitement and the interest and you're ready to apply all this energy, you know, you have nothing in a lot of sense to show for that except being able to vocalize it. You can't, you know, it's hard to show someone in the field of, you know, in the culinary world, why being a platoon leader or an aide or being deployed, it's, you know, that becomes even greater challenge than trying to go become a manager somewhere. It's even greater to be like, this is why I, you know, want to be an authority on dining is because I was a platoon leader, you know? And so I think recognizing that even though it is a passion, you can turn that passion into your profession and to have the strength to do that. I think I was fortunate that because I've been so vocal about my passion over the years, my friends and family, it was like a no-brainer when I told them I wanted to go to culinary school. I think it was more me and the expectations I had put on myself that I was going up against. And, you know, I struggled with a lot of my military mentors not understanding and a lot of my coworkers in the military not understanding. But as far as like personal relationships, everyone was like, obviously you're going to culinary school. And that was incredibly reassuring.
That's great, man. That echoes so much for me. Because when I was supposed to go from business school to consulting at McKinsey, which is like a tried and true mm-hmm. path. And mm-hmm. then I remember when I told my parents that I was going to start my own company instead mm-hmm. and like turn down the offer, it was like telling them I was going to go into space and fight aliens. Like it was so foreign, you know, and like parents are so protective anyways. But I also remember mm-hmm. that like, after that shock, when I talked about what I wanted to do, they could hear the passion in my voice. They could at least understand that and say, like, look, we don't understand what you're doing, but it seems like you're really excited and it makes you happy. And so that's great. But I remember like it was mm-hmm. similar. It was like a similar process of like with everyone I knew of like what you're doing, what? And like, it's just kind of, I think that's part of that growing process though, of starting your own company.
Yes, absolutely. And I think even as you were describing that and what I was saying, I thought once I had peeled back so many layers of, I had gotten pretty far at the JMO recruiters. I had taken the GMAT and started applying to school. So I had really gone down those paths far enough to know, okay, this is not what I want to do. And that's another layer that I shed internally of what I felt my expected path was. And I found that as I got closer and closer to that, and finally had that realization of what I wanted to do, it was almost like a no stopping me in the sense that my conviction was so strong for it that it was a lot easier to, you know, when they say, well, you've got to go talk to the brigade commander about what your plan is. And I'm like, great, because I'm excited about this. And so instead of going at it like apologetically, I was so excited to say this is what I'm going to be working on that it was, again, so reassuring when, for instance, after that interaction, he was like, this is great. It sounds like you really are finding what you want to work on. I'm like, whoa, that's the first person who's actually had that reaction and not like, you're making a huge mistake. And so I think once that light bulb goes on of what, you know, you really want to work on, being able to have that conviction is what helps get through those last hurdles of actually making it a reality.
And that's so encouraging too, to hear the leadership's reaction, because I'm picturing if this was like a TBS movie, he would have been yelling at you and telling you you're a fool and throwing away your life. But it's so reassuring to hear him supporting you doing something so non-traditional.
No, absolutely. And I think, you know, unfortunately that was not a lot of I'm sure maybe we'll touch upon that, but that was not the case across the board. And so that particular scenario was extremely reassuring because it wasn't what I was used to hearing.
Yeah, well, I was going to ask about the Stanford Ignite program next, but let's talk about that first. Like, what were some of the other challenges you faced in starting your company?
Well, I think while still in the military, a lot of the challenges were it was the whole you don't know what you don't know. I knew what I was excited about in the field I wanted to work in, but understanding how to get there just seemed like the biggest black hole of I have no clue of where to begin. And I think that's actually a natural progression into where Stanford Ignite fits in. Is my first step after realizing, okay, I want to be an entrepreneur, I want to start a company, was just every online resource that I could get my hands on. So whether it was taking the Boots to Business course, taking whatever entrepreneur courses that the Soldier for Life transition program for the Army offers, which they do offer a few entrepreneur courses. So taking all of them and just trying to get my head in that space of like, okay, what are the basic foundation that I need to understand here? And so even just armed with that online research I could do myself of researching business plans and just starting like over again of educating myself in business basics. I was a management undergrad at West Point and we took predominantly all business classes, but that felt like so many years previously I couldn't remember. I was like, oh, I know I've learned this. So I think that that was the first hurdle, was just learning 101 all over again. And I'm kind of getting away from your challenges and more onto these stepping stones of how to get to the part where you could actually start it. But I went on that tech trek that I'm sure you're probably familiar with, and that was my first exposure to a civilian like company that wasn't, you know, large corporate America. And it was like my mind was blown of, oh, wait, there's a place for us out there, you know, as veterans in a company like this. And we went to all these different startups, and that was just like this another major eye opening of that there's just this whole untapped world in my mind of other things you can be doing that aren't just this prescribed route that I felt I had to be on. So suddenly I didn't feel alone. I felt like, oh, a lot of people want to jump and cross into another world and are, you know, challenged to find ways to make that happen. And so the way I've described it since the Ignite program is that tech track opened my eyes to what could be, but I still didn't know how to get there. And then getting in and attending the Ignite program taught me so much of, now how do you actually get to starting a business, running a business, growing a business. They actually taught me the tools of how to make that a reality. So coming out of there, I had all the confidence in the world of, okay, even if it's, you know, when I run into things I don't know, I now know how to find the resources, how to ask the questions. And so kind of off from your question a bit, but
no, that's great. No, I love the thread weaved throughout of knowing what you wanted to do, and then every step along the way trying to get more resources to help you in that. And I love that you took advantage of the Army for Life course and the Vet Tech Trek, and then Stanford Ignite. And you're actually the first person I think I've had on the show who's been through the Stanford Ignite program. You spoke about it a little bit, but I'd love to dive into detail of what's it like, how's it structured, what you took away from that experience. Because I believe that while you were there, you also incubated two different ideas, mm-hmm. the event side of what you do and Planly.
So, yes, very, very close. So first, I think with the Stanford Ignite program, which I am couldn't speak more highly of, I had found it. I was joking. They always asked us, how did you hear about Stanford Ignite? And almost everyone in the program, there was about 37 of us veterans in the program and actually quite a few active duty, would say, I had a friend that attended, or I am on Stanford's mailing list, all these. And I'm like, what? I was five pages deep in a Google search of veteran entrepreneur programs, and I found you online. And they were in shock, because they said, that was not typically how people found the program. But I was sitting in Korea in a transition program or transition class, and I was kind of frustrated that so many of the veteran entrepreneur programs were kind of these, after I had done one, this is going to be a 4-week online course. Once I had done one, I realized every resource was almost the same, and they weren't really something you could bite into. They were very surface level. And I found this Stanford program, and I almost thought it was too good to be true. Wait, it's full time. You're going to go for a month, and it's, high intensity. It's, a micro MBA of sorts. You're going to be with veterans. You're at Stanford. I mean, couldn't even fathom that this was real. And I hadn't heard about it. And so, a year out before they even taking applications, I had inquired about information for it, and was thrilled to find out that I had been accepted. But part of it, which I think is incredible, is everyone pitches an idea for a business into the program, and then you vote through various, you would submit a video, then you do an elevator pitch, and your peers vote and accept. I think we accepted maybe 6 or 7 ideas that you incubate while you're there. And so when I first got out of the military, my first thing I was working on was Le Brazen, which was a dining events company that put on dinners and tastings, and I would host the events and plan them. And so I pitched that a online marketplace version of event planning going into it, and fortunately had it accepted. And so we started incubating that while there, and quickly, as we worked with our mentor there, had slightly pivoted and got to where Planly ended up, which was streamlining grouped dining reservations at restaurants and automating it in 3 clicks. And what was incredible about the program is, you couldn't imagine higher caliber professors that they're bringing in to teach every facet of business. Imagine when Condoleezza Rice was one of our instructors. It was just incredible. So we went to class for maybe 8 a.m. until 5 p.m. every day, with just, they would say in a course of a day, we try to get through almost 2 semesters of business school. And so, which was really incredible. And then after hours is when we would work on our various businesses that we were incubating. And so it was such an incredible experience for me, not only to be every day in a room of like-minded veterans who wanted a maybe less traditional path working into tech or as an entrepreneur. So that was just incredible in itself. The academics were incredible, but then to also have a team of 6 brilliant veterans working on my concept was just too good to be true. So we had worked on Planly for a month, and on the final day when our group pitched, the panel we were pitching to just asked me straight up if I would cancel my flight and stay and really give it a shot and launch it in real time. And so I did that. I, on the day of quote unquote graduation, canceled my flight.
What was that?
My suitcase.
What was that like? Was it like an instantaneous decision, or was it like this free falling feeling in the pit of your stomach and like debating this, or how hard of a decision was that?
Oh no, it literally went, the pitch got over. They gave their feedback, the four panelists, and one in particular said, you know, right away, he said, please come here, like right away, come talk to me. And his first words were, are you willing to cancel your flight and stay here? And I didn't even have a flinch. I said, yes.
That's awesome.
That was that. And from there on, for the next couple of months, it was just going 1,000 miles an hour, learning so rapidly. It was like, there was no sleeping happening. I was couch surfing and living, rotating my 30 days of clothes over and over, and really seeing where that got me. And what an incredible experience. But I think the biggest takeaway for me there is it was going really well. And I was very excited about it. But I realized that every day that I was working in more of a tech space as a founder in that capacity, I was getting further and further away from what it is that I really love, which is working directly with restaurants and storytelling and the creative side of things and getting more and more technical and financial. And for me, I had already spent so much time getting to what I knew I was passionate about. And now it was very important to me to be true to myself that, you know, despite the mind-blowing amount of doors that were open after the Stanford program and the mentors that came forward and were helping me, you know, that was probably even a harder decision than getting out of the military, was walking away from Silicon Valley and all the excitement to say, this is fantastic. This is exciting. I love it. I've learned so much, but this isn't what I want to do. And that was like going through it all again of explaining to people who, you know, have expectations for you of, yes, this is great, thank you, but this is not what I want to do. And again, I think I benefited from my mentor out there who was the one that asked me to cancel that flight. I was, you know, foolishly scared to death to tell him that this isn't what I want to do, because he just believed in me so much. And it was just like the greatest feeling on earth when I finally laid it all out and wrote to him and said, this is why, this is what I'm excited about, this is what I want to be working on, to have him just be like, hey, what are you worried about? Like, it's you that I support, not this business or that business. Like, this is amazing. This is great. You've identified what you want. Like, that's what's important. People will go a lifetime and not have that reality check with themselves. This is great. And I was like, oh, okay. Like, thank you. I can do this.
That's great. I mean, Annie, one of the things I love about your story is that one of the most repeated things that come up on this show is how people stress the importance of self-knowledge. And what I think is just so amazing is you haven't really mentioned self-knowledge once, and yet you've given so many examples of where that commitment to self-knowledge drove you to make very challenging decisions, of Army to culinary school and then to Stanford Ignite and then leaving a Stanford Ignite startup to start your own. Like, you continuously are just paying attention to what matters most for you and making the hard challenge to pursue that. And so I really like that. I think it's just a powerful example for our audience to see someone in action, and also to see that it's not easy. Maybe once you make the decision, you see that support, it is, but it just seems like when you tell these stories, like you're at the precipice of this massive cliff, and then you make that leap and things work out. But I can only imagine the dedication to your values and principles and self-knowledge that it took to make that leap again and again.
Yes, absolutely. And I think, you know, so much of the ability to do that comes from this kind of commitment I've made to myself, that started at West Point, of I'm not going to waste any energy, like not being happy or not being challenged or not, you know, waking up and doing what I want to do. And I think I can tie it to an exact moment at West Point where I thought I'd bottomed out. It was sophomore year. I was so stressed out. I was overwhelmed. I was like, what have I gotten myself into? You know, is this what I want to be doing? Like, I just was miserable and really hitting rock bottom. And I had like a powerful wake up moment when I realized, that my life was my own and that I could make my own decisions. And even within scenarios like at West Point, with all of the structure and the discipline, or in the military where you feel confined by someone else's decisions, I can still control my attitude towards them, and I can, you know, shape how I operate within that. And like that realization is kind of what drove me from then on, of realizing, okay, if I'm going to be doing things, even that I'm not thrilled about doing, how can I enjoy it or make the most out of it? And I think that's why I ended up having a great time at West Point and really getting the most out of it. And then again, in the military, of, you know, I think just getting as much experience and challenging myself as possible, but then also recognizing, okay, it's time to challenge myself in a way that meets my personal interests. But I think that constant back talk in my mind of, are you happy? Are you satisfied? Are you challenged? Are you enjoying this? Has just been leading my decisions ever since then.
And two other questions about Stanford Ignite. Did you do the, I know there's like a veteran specific Ignite program. Did you do that or the traditional one? And do you have any thoughts on which to do?
Yes, I did the veterans specific. They do it once a year for post 9/11 veterans. The other, they have two other versions of the program. One is overseas that you can apply for, but typically that is for students or professionals that are in that country. And then they have a full-time program, civilian-wise. But I would say as a veteran, I would 100% do the veterans program. There is no difference in the caliber or the professors. There is a slightly different focus because a lot of the leadership courses and things on management that the normal program would get, the veterans, they kind of gloss over. They recognize you have that, so they spend a little more time on things like finance or things that you probably didn't get in the military. But not only just that, I think my biggest fear about late things that are labeled like veterans only would be whether, you know, there's some sort of, when you get all the veterans together, is it going to be as, are we going to have like a broad experience? Are we going to all be so like-minded that we don't challenge each other? And I would say that just completely changed my attitude towards that, because I was just blown away at how egos were checked at the door. Rank was checked at the door. Military experience was checked at the door. It felt like we were all there because everyone was excited about tech or entrepreneurship. And for that reason, I would 100% recommend the veterans program, because you're all kind of in this similar mindset, but bringing such a diverse amount of background and interests that I was just blown away at the talents and, you know, non-military related skills that people were bringing to the table, that it was just incredible. So I would say absolutely the veterans program. The civilian version of the program is also a lot of PhDs and a lot of current Stanford students that are seeking to have more balance in their kind of knowledge base of business-wise. So we did some shared social events and classes with the other program, and I'd say the majority of those are all engineers or somehow med students, PhDs, so a very different group of people. And I think that the veterans program, I just would recommend hands down to anybody.
That's great, and I'm glad you clarified that, because my initial thought was, oh, is it going to be lesser in somehow, or would you miss out on the influence of people with different backgrounds? But I think that was a great articulation. And one other question I had is there a cost associated with this? I'm just curious, like ballpark of what that cost is.
Mm-hmm. So again, this is what makes it incredible, is it's a program that SOCOM had originally gotten together with Stanford to help put together. So it is subsidized. So in the end, the cost to the veteran students is for, like, it's around $2,000. It's for room and board type, because you do live in a really beautiful kind of a apartment-like dorm while you're there, whereas the traditional program runs nearly almost $15,000, I believe. So, I mean, it's just a really incredible opportunity that they have provided for veterans to make it accessible.
That's great. And then one other question just about entrepreneurship. Are there any resources, additional resources you'd recommend to listeners? And that could be podcasts you listen to, books you read, magazines. Like, how do you continue to deepen your knowledge and just grow in entrepreneurship?
Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, it comes in kind of increments of gaining your knowledge. I think it's a great place to start is things like Boots to Business, or, you know, for me, I reached out to like my local small business center where I was living. There's just so many resources that are available there, and free books and assistance, things like that. I also started going to something called Million Cups. It's like a once a week group of entrepreneurs. It's completely free to be a part of. And every week someone pitches for about 20 minutes their idea or thought or business. And then you're just surrounded with other like-minded people who provide feedback and talk and network. And so that kind of helped me get my feet wet of getting every week going to that and having to talk, not as a veteran, but as an entrepreneur, just kept building my confidence of I can do this. And I think then like that would maybe been my like beginner level of resources. And then being able to listen to startup podcasts, starting to do a lot of online reading, or even just, you know, following different people I look up to on Twitter, things like that. Just seeing what people are talking about, I'd say would be the next stage.
What are some of those podcasts that you can think of off the top of your head?
Mm-hmm. I had, what is the one called Startup? I've been listening to one like religiously. I'd have to look up the name. I can get it to you. That was almost like 101. It's a guy talking through, he wanted to start a podcast company. You might be familiar with this one. And each episode, I loved it because it was spoken like a layman type, you know, as opposed to,
yep,
I know, have all this knowledge. It was like, I could understand all of his pain points of just kind of coming out of left field and having this passion. And now how the heck do I, so he talks through his first meeting with an investor and how horrible it went. And so I really liked that podcast because it just felt so relatable. And then honestly, especially when I was out in San Francisco, I always thought it would be like a little cheesy to be like, oh, the Veterans Network, you know, what is that? And it didn't interest me. But I just, once I was there, canceled my flight home and was living out of my suitcase, it became my first place to turn is, well, who in this area, whether I know them or not, has military experience? Because immediately I felt like I might be able to relate to them more. And I felt almost weird saying that because I never imagined myself doing it. But that just proved to be probably the most supportive resource that I found was this massive community of vets who had transitioned into tech or were doing startups or, you know, were founders or working on ones, and being able to ask them, you know, questions that to someone else might sound so juvenile or stupid, but you just don't know. It's all so new to you. That was an incredible resource. So I know that sounds a bit cliche, but it just proves that it was so helpful and supportive to know that I could ask and that other people had kind of walked in my shoes.
This is great. There's like a million other questions I could ask, but I want to be sensitive to time and just maybe end with more open-ended, where you've provided mm-hmm. so much value across things, but what else would you like to share with a group of veterans listening? It could be about life or work or just anything on your mind that we haven't covered.
I think the number one thing for me, because, you know, like I said, it took me a few years to even get to that point, is, you know, whether finding ways to strip in your mind of what you feel like you should be doing and really getting to the core of asking yourself, like in a fantasy land, what would I be doing? And then forcing yourself to think like, wait, it doesn't have to be a fantasy land. I can do that. And I think the biggest thing also for me is that it is not a failure or a dishonorable thing to recognize that you want to do something other than military service. I only have favorable things to say about serving in the military and what an experience that was for me. And in my mind, I knew that I felt just as proud and just as strong from recognizing I wanted to do something else. I didn't see it as quitting or, you know, incapable of doing this or that. People will make you feel that way, but it's just absolutely not the case. So that would be my two things would be, you know, find a way to, you know, have a dialogue with yourself on stripping back what you think you should be doing and asking yourself what would really make you feel satisfied or make you happy. And then also recognizing that, you know, doing something other than serving the military is not somehow a failure, that is just another way of serving, is recognizing that being a veteran who's doing something they're passionate about and love, in my mind, is a great reflection on the military, because they're showing how they can take their skills and do something that also brings them a lot of personal satisfaction.
Well, Annie, this is awesome. And I will put links in the show notes to the different things that you've talked about. But I just really appreciate not only sharing your story, but the example you are for the veteran community. And I just really, really love the way that you've articulated that, where, you know, granting people that freedom to do what they want to do. And in many ways, if veterans do what makes them happy and where they're going to succeed, that is also giving back to the veteran community, because they're being that example in the civilian world of the value of serving in the military. And they're also, you know, they're going to be a resource for other veterans who go after them. So thank you so much for your time and taking the time to speak with me in the audience.
No, thank you. I really enjoyed this. So thank you very much. I enjoyed talking to you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Beyond the Uniform. There are over 200 free episodes at beyondtheuniform.io. They're classified by the industry of focus, the functional role the person plays, and more. Beyond the Uniform is hosted, produced, and edited by me, Justin Asiri. Our director of outreach, responsible for sponsorship and guest episodes, is Steve Bain. Our editor, responsible for the show notes and text transcripts for all episodes, is Kathleen Dillon. Our data analytics and insights advisor is Andrew Woolridge. If you are enjoying Beyond the Uniform, you can help us out by telling your veterans and friends in the military about this free resource. There is more information on the website about how you can sponsor an episode or donate to our program to help us grow the work that we're doing. Be sure to check out the coaching section of beyondtheuniform.io, where you can be paired with professional, subsidized coaches to help you figure out your next career move. You can sign up for our newsletter to be up to date on the latest happenings at Beyond the Uniform. And in each show notes section, there is a link to audible.com, which is providing a free audiobook of your choice to Beyond the Uniform listeners. You get a free book of your choosing, and Beyond the Uniform gets $15 to subsidize the cost of the show, regardless of whether you continue with audible.com or not. Check that out and more in the show notes for this episode. Keep the feedback coming. Let me know what resources would help you in your career, and we'll do our best to make that happen. Take care, be safe, and I'll be back next week with more interviews with military veterans about their civilian career.